In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, an officer of the Knights Templar discusses the life and times of America's most powerful, influential, and nefarious Mason.
His beliefs were such that, especially towards the Native Indians, they believed in equality. But he also believed the slavery in that it supported the economic side of the South, the agricultural side. So he must have been, right from the very start, a very tormented individual.
If you enjoy Conspiracy Unlimited, why not become a Conspiracy Unlimited Plus member? For just $1.99 per month, you'll gain access to two bonus, exclusive, commercial-free episodes per month. Plus, access to my back catalog of episodes. That's over 350 episodes. To subscribe, just go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com and click on Gain Access to Premium Episodes. Again, go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com and click on Get Access to Premium Episodes, or click on the link in the episode notes. Conspiracy Unlimited Plus, for less than $2 per month. Why not sign up today?
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs, here's Richard Serrett.
Welcome to your Monday, and I hope you had a chance to listen in as I hosted Coast to Coast AM this weekend. I'll be back in the Coast Air Chair Sunday, May 31st, but I'll also be hanging out a little bit with George Norrie as a guest on Coast this coming Thursday, May 14th, from 11:30 to midnight Pacific or 2:30 to 3 a.m. Friday morning. This is a special edition of Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie will be interviewing all of us guest hosts, Ian Punnett and George Knapp, myself, Jimmy Church, Lisa Garr, and Connie Willis. I'm really looking forward to this. It should be a lot of fun. Hope you can listen in. Go to coasttocoastam.com for more information. The Last Refuge of the Knights Templar by William Mann is a modern-day thriller centered on authentic historical letters encoded with Templar and Rosicrucian secrets. It includes the actual text of recently discovered correspondence between two famous 19th century Masonic leaders, Albert Pike and Colonel J.W.B. MacLeod Moore. It also includes fascinating details about the life and times of Pike, the most influential American Freemason, primarily in the Scottish Rite Southern jurisdiction. Pike was also a general in the Confederate Army, a member of the secret society Knights of the Golden Circle and the KKK, and a possible conspirator in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, and of course, the author of one of the most important books in Freemasonry, Morals and Dogma. William F. Mann is an officer of the Knights Templar of Canada's Grand Executive Committee, a member of its Grand Council, and serves as the Sovereign Great Priory's Grand Archivist. Bill is a registered planner, forester, landscape architect, and environmental management consultant within both the province of Ontario and in Canada. His latest book is The Last Refuge of the Knights Templar. Hey, William, welcome back to Conspiracy Unlimited. How are you?
Good. Thanks very much, Richard. How are you doing with the self-isolation?
Well, as I always say, I've been practicing social distancing for decades, so I haven't really noticed a difference.
I was thinking that you're doing your podcast most of the time, probably within a quiet room and in your house. So hopefully, I'm finding it hard. I'm finding as a Mason myself, I'm always on the phone talking to other Masons. A lot of the older fellas, they're really suffering from not being able to go to the meetings and they're suffering from social distancing and everything.
I can imagine, yes. For a certain generation, not used to, let's say, getting together on Zoom, it's just not the same. And so, social interaction is vital, really, to good health, I think, to good mental health.
Very much so. And that's what the fraternities and the brotherhoods are all about, that social interaction. Without that, I think a lot of people are feeling a lot rather hollow.
Certainly. So let's talk about The Last Refuge of the Knights Templar, the ultimate secret of the Pike letters. And before we get into how you uncovered these letters and some of their contents, let's talk about Albert Pike. And to start off with, as you point out in the foreword, such a remarkable man, nefarious in some quarters and certainly influential. But as you point out, with such a character, it was very easy for you to write a piece of fiction. But why turn this amazing adventure into a novel when you could argue just the actual story itself as a piece of nonfiction would have made a terrific read?
It would have, but I found that although my nonfiction books have sold really well and have been bestsellers here in Canada and in Europe around the world, I find that people are more accepting of some of the, let me put it this way, the more distant concepts, spiritual concepts that are being put forward and some of the background. And as you pointed out, Albert Pike is really quite an enigmatic figure. I've been studying him for over 25 years, and when I discovered these letters, I was just flabbergasted in terms of what I read to be the hidden meanings behind the letters between Albert Pike, who at the time was Sovereign Grand Commander of the Scottish Rite of the Southern Jurisdiction in the United States, and Colonel William James Bury MacLeod Moore. I know that's a mouthful, but he was the first Supreme Grand Master, Sovereign Great Priory, Knights Templar of Canada. I was just fascinated, but I also was wary because, as you pointed out, Albert Pike is such a nefarious fellow. Not that well known, but within certain circles, within certain extreme circles, especially in the south of the states, he's almost considered to be a demigod.
Let's talk about his early life, because obviously a brilliant mind, accepted into Harvard at the age of 16, but he couldn't afford to go. Tell me a little bit about his formative years.
Well, as I dug into his background, I found that he was in fact Jesuit trained. They must have recognized at a very early age the brilliance of Pike himself. But given that he was accepted into Harvard at 16, prior to the Civil War, is remarkable in itself. But then, given that he couldn't afford to go, he was self-taught, and he put himself through virtually law school and his training outside of the formal academic circles, and passed the bar exams of Arkansas, which is pretty amazing at the time when you think about it.
There's a wonderful story about you describe him as being a restless soul, as most self-made men are. And shortly after the Louisiana Purchase, he decided to head west on a hunting expedition to Taos, New Mexico, of all places. What happened?
Can you imagine on the start of the trip, his horse essentially bolted and died, and he walked the 1,500 miles. Across desert, across plains, across quite the nefarious territory and Indian territory. That, to me, was a remarkable in itself. It showed the determination and the inner spirituality of this character. And then he went on to fight within the American-Mexican Civil War, and then he went on and became a brigadier general for the South in the Civil War. Again, remarkable in itself. So obviously his brilliance, his determination, his stamina, he was quite a dynamic fellow at that time, really shone through. What I found really amazing is that he chose to fight for the South. His beliefs were such that especially towards the Native Indians, they believed in equality, but he also believed in slavery in that it supported the industrial side or the economic side of the South, the agricultural side. So he must have been right from the very, very start a very tormented individual. I know that a number of his letters talk about his inability to sleep and inability to achieve calm. In many ways, I felt for him because in terms of restlessness, I actually display that. I've displayed that throughout my whole life.
Right. I want to come back to his affinity for Native North Americans and this, as you describe, one of the great enigmas of his life, that as a lawyer, he took up their cause right to the Supreme Court, and yet, on the other hand, defended slavery. I just wanted to back up a moment, too, because I found this interesting, that he married into some considerable money. His wife was a descendant of Alexander Hamilton.
Again, the enigma comes through. He was obviously had certain amount of influence that he could impart himself with into the social circles, and he achieved that, but he was just as comfortable sitting around the campfire and being initiated into the secret societies of the Native Cherokee and Choctaw, the Medewin. So that is fascinating in itself. And he considered Native Americans to be his equal, or from a spiritual point of view, beyond his equal. But on the other hand, he commanded the three groups of Native Indians during the early part of the Civil War. They fought for the South, which is a very little known fact in itself.
Right. There was a cavalry unit, but they were... I guess the agreement that he had made with them was that they would only sort of patrol or fight on Indian land. And when he was ordered to take his unit into Arkansas, he refused and got into some serious hot water with the Confederacy. I believe they not charge him with treason?
Absolutely. So he was around 1863, 1864, on the run from the Southern government in itself. He was hiding out in the wilds of Arkansas, trying to keep contact with his family. And once that was sorted out, then the end of the Civil War, and he was actually charged by the Union, the federal government, in terms of possibly being involved in the Lincoln conspiracy.
Right. Let's talk about his links to the Golden Circle.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, John Wilkes Booth was supposedly also a member, and this is the center of the conspiracy to assassinate Abraham Lincoln, who was certainly, you know, today we view him as the great emancipator, but he was considered by many as a very divisive character, a bit of a tyrant. I mean, he closed down newspapers. He had any opposition thrown into jail. Now, you could argue, well, that was the Civil War. He was struggling to keep the country together, and extreme measures were in order. But any opposition was just not tolerated. But of all the conspirators, Albert Pike was the only one to escape the hangman's noose. What do we know about his involvement in the Golden Circle and his involvement, perhaps, in the conspiracy to assassinate President Lincoln?
Well, the only thing that we know for sure is that he developed the basic initiatory degrees for the Knights of the Golden Circle and also the Ku Klux Klan. And we know that he was a major force within the Arkansas Ku Klux Klan at the end of the Civil War. Now, the interesting thing about what I write about and his involvement with Lincoln and the federal government is that there's an interesting constitutional argument here. Lincoln was trying to impose the federal will across the individual nations. And I find it interesting, over 150 years from the Civil War now, we have this whole question of, in COVID times, the federal responsibility for and the individual states' responsibility. So unless you know your history, it is bound to repeat itself. So that's a really interesting issue. And that's one of the coming full circle. That's one of the reasons that I found the need to incorporate it within a fictional story. I hope that anybody who reads the book will realize that the letters that I included from Pike and the history of Pike is authentic and real. But I'm concerned that some of those letters will actually be used to certain purposes that they're not intended for. Because as I pointed out and wrote about within the story itself, over Pike's life, I believe that he looked to atone for his earlier sins, if that's what you want to call them. And he was always searching for that spirituality. Very fascinating character. And a lot of people don't realize is that there's still a statue to Albert Pike right in the heart of Washington, D.C., while other Confederate generals have been torn down or warehoused, Albert Pike sits in all his glory right in the heart of Washington, D.C.
Right. I wanted to circle back to his involvement with Native Americans and representing them all the way to the Supreme Court. As you point out, and this is something that I believe you've touched on quite a bit in other books, and that is why he might have had such an affinity for Native Americans and considered them their equals. And this gets into the major premise of your book, and that is the Knights Templar in the New World, and a connection that the Knights Templar may have had with the Native Americans going back hundreds and hundreds of years.
I think Albert Pike realized that. As you indicated, the overriding concept of my prior books and this book was that there was a certain group of medieval Knights Templar between the 11th and 14th centuries came to North America and really brought with them what is considered to be the Templar treasure. and through strategic intermarriage with the native North Americans, were able to move inland and over the centuries establish secret settlements or refuges across North America, always being pursued by the church and by the European royalty. It's interesting, some of his letters, ones that I didn't include within the book, actually acknowledge this, to talk about the majestic spirituality of the Native Americans, comparable to those of the medieval Knights Templar. And Albert Pike, along with being Sovereign Grand Commander, was Grand Master of the Knights Templar and reintroduced the Knights Templar Order into the United States through McLeodmore in Canada.
Talk to me about the connection between the Knights Templar and Scottish Rite Freemasonry.
Well, the notion is, and a lot of people say that there's no definitive connection, but I've been able to, and that's for a further date, being able to establish definitive connections. Knights Templar, medieval Knights Templar and their degrees really what became the basis and evolved into Freemasonry in the 14th to 16th century. A lot of people don't accept that. Even Masons don't accept that. But as I say, I've seen proof to that fact. Freemasonry, as it evolved in the 16th, 17th, 18th centuries, there's two types of Freemasonry. There's a York Rite Freemasonry, which is English, primarily established since 1717. But there's also Scottish Rite Freemasonry, which has an older history. Actually, it blended with the French Lodge Freemasonry that's existed since the 1500s, 1600s. And it all came together in the 1800s, and it was Pike, along with McLeodmore, who brought together sort of pieces of the puzzle that had been scattered over the last two centuries prior to their time. And it was Pike who wrote Morals and Dogma, the penultimate magnum opus for the Freemasonry, explaining the various degrees and the background to the various degrees. You can appreciate that during the Civil War and prior times, a number of the degrees, especially in the southern states, have been scattered. So he was the one that put back together the 32 degrees of Southern Rite Freemasonry as we know it. A fascinating ordeal in itself, and to consider that he learned 15 different languages, probably 7 to 8 of them extinct at the time, in order to understand the background and concepts to the various degrees that he reconstructed.
While he was fleeing persecution or prosecution, I should say, from the Union side, he spent several months in Canada.
Yes.
Whereabouts in Canada did he live for that short period?
He moved around a fair amount, but the start of my book indicates, rightfully so, he lived for a time in Ottawa, the capital, or what was going to be the capital of Canada at that time. And his movements were actually assisted and controlled by a number of Masons, including Colonel Moore. Fascinating to think about what was discussed within those 3 months at the time. Was he considered to be a Confederate rebel disguised as somebody else? It doesn't appear so. It seems that he was living his life free and easy, to the point that within 3 months' time, the President of the United States at that time, who was just conveniently made a 33-degree Scottish Rite Freemason, pardoned Albert Pike so he could come back to the States.
Rather a conspicuous fellow. I mean, it's interesting how he managed to elude captivity or capture. He was over 6 foot tall, weighed 300 pounds, shoulder-length hair. How did he escape capture?
Well, that's a fascinating thing. Apparently, you know, here's a fellow that looked like oversized Santa Claus, but he really didn't go into hiding. everybody accepted who he was, and everybody accepted where he was, and nobody really made that great an effort to retrieve him and to bring him forward for a form of justice at the federal level. I think there were a number of sympathizers on both sides, and then you have the Masonic Brotherhood associated with that, and I wouldn't call it a conspiracy, but I would say that it was very much for those with the eyes to see it, he was something more than what he portrayed.
More of my conversation with William Mann when Conspiracy Unlimited returns.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you. Now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Lincoln County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market. You know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
The discovery of carbon-60 is likely to be the most amazing chemistry discovery of the late 20th century. And my friends at C60EVO.com are the world's number one manufacturer of C60. The safe, consumable form of pure C60 is called ESS60, and the mighty Aphrodite and I take a tablespoon every morning. ESS60 is the C60 formulation used in the famous 2012 original Paris study that showed ESS60 doubled the lifespan of rats. ESS60 from C60EVO.com is raw C60 that's been produced, certified, and guaranteed for safe human consumption. ESS60 from C60EVO.com is a powerful molecule that acts as a nano antioxidant to attract, stabilize, and neutralize free radicals. It's also known to have 172 times the antioxidant power of vitamin C. 172 times. which may be why people are feeling healthier on C60. All I know is the mighty Aphrodite and I are sleeping great, and we're both pain-free. To get your bottle of ESS60, go to the episode notes for this podcast and click on the C60evo.com link. Use the code RS1SPEC to get 5% off. RS1SPEC and get 5% off. It's time to start taking responsibility for your health. Time to support your immune system. Join the mighty Aphrodite and I. If you want more energy, mental clarity, and a great night's sleep, ESS60 from C60evo.com. Again, go to the episode notes and click on the C60evo.com link and use the promo code RS1SPEC to get 5% off.
The truth goes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. Then, it is violently opposed. Finally, it is accepted as self-evident.
Let me just read that again. I don't know what that means.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
William Mann, the author of The Last Refuge of the Knights Templar, is here. We need to talk about, let's just call him WJB for short.
Yeah, sure.
Colonel WJB McLeod Moore. Tell us about this fascinating character. Who was he? Why is he important?
Well, he was in actual fact probably the physical opposite of Albert Pike, you know, very stately, very long whiskers, the penultimate British colonel. And he was Irish to start out with. He was initiated into Freemasonry in Ireland, actually moved through Scotland, and actually was positioned as a lieutenant on the Isle of Malta. And at that time, what he did is he reintroduced the old Knights Templar degree that he received in Ireland. So it was the Irish Knights Templar degree. And then he was repositioned or sent to Canada. And the purpose of his position in Canada was he was essentially the quartermaster general for all of Canada at that time, Lower and Upper Canada, before its confederation in 1867. So what's really interesting that he was the opposite in many ways to Albert Pike. But what they shared was a love of Freemasonry and the fraternity itself. Pike was being supplied, which I find really interesting. I have a number of copies of the booklets that were given to Pike by McLeod Moore. McLeod Moore did a lot of traveling and collected a lot of the older degrees associated with Knights Templar, with Chapter, with Cryptic Rite, all the York Rite degrees and Scottish Rite degrees. And he was actually supplying information to Pike, knowing that Pike was looking to reconstruct the Scottish Rite degrees.
And so after Pike returned to the United States, when did the correspondence between these two individuals begin?
They started almost immediately, and they continued over approximately 30 years till McLeod Moore's death in 1890, and Pike followed very quickly in 1891.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, Albert Pike holds an interesting distinction regarding his burial inside, I guess, the old walls of Washington, D.C.
Yes. What I found really interesting, he was buried, first of all, in the Oak Ridge Cemetery, but he was reinterred within the Scottish Rite building that's in downtown Washington, D.C., the southern jurisdiction. It's a very unique building. Dan Brown has written about it within his latest novel. But the interesting thing is that a lot of people don't realize is that that building, the Scottish Rite building, was designed as a mausoleum. And Albert Pike's bones were actually reinterred into the walls of the Scottish Rite building and act as his final resting place. So you can imagine the veneration that was paid to Albert Pike during his life and in his afterlife. quite incredible.
And does he not also hold the distinction of being the only individual buried within, I guess, what would have been the old city limits of Washington, D.C.?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And when he died, fascinating thing, when he died essentially penniless. But he was supported by the fraternity, the brotherhood itself. Think about the veneration paid to this fellow. It was beyond. Some say that he carried more power than the president of the United States during his lifetime.
How was that? I mean, how can you give me an example of how he held more influence and power than presidents?
Well, I think the pardon that he received from the president of the United States at the time, Andrew Johnson, was indicative of itself. He arranged that the president would receive the 33 degrees of Scottish Rite Freemasonry. In return, he received the pardon, and he was actually given one of the prestige positions within the cabinet itself. That would be the Indian agent for all of the United States, which is known at that time.
So the letters, how were they uncovered? How did you, what was your role in uncovering the correspondence between Albert Pike and Colonel W.J.B. McLeod Moore?
Well, what's fascinating is that, our Grand Chancellery was located within Toronto itself in an old beautiful old building. But there was a fire and a flood, and it was decided to move the Grand Chancellery. And it was the Grand Chancellor himself at the time who invited me, went down in the basement, and we cleared out the basement. At that point, I was the Grand Historian Archivist for the Sovereign Great Priory of Canada, and I came upon this old briefcase, and within the briefcase, I realized that it was the personal papers of McLeod Moore, and contained within a folio was the set of letters between Albert Pike and McLeod Moore, and obviously, a lot of people, nobody realized what the importance of these letters. It took me a while, took myself even a while to realize the importance of the letters. And as Grand Historian and Grand Archivist, and now as Supreme Grand Master, I guard those letters very carefully on behalf of the Sovereign Great Priory of Canada.
And give me a sense of the volume of the correspondence.
It's interesting. I try to put myself in the light of Albert Pike. It's obvious that at that time he wrote letters late at night. He was very melancholy. Some of the letters were very trivial. Some of them are very deep and spiritual. But the volume of letters, there's approximately 33 letters, which I find really interesting as they correspond to the 33 initiatory degrees of the Scottish Rite Freemasonry.
And was there anything in that correspondence that absolutely flabbergasted you?
Yes, the one letter that I include within the book is the one that really flabbergasted me. It talked about the notion, and there's an insinuation that he knew the location of the last refuge of those Knights Templar who had remained with the Native North Americans. And the Native North Americans actually became the guardians of a sacred vault. And within that sacred vault, the speculation is that we're talking not national treasure, we're not talking Da Vinci Code treasure, but we're talking about the treasure that was recovered by the original 9 Knights Templar under the Temple of Solomon in 1098. So that's a fascinating ordeal in itself, to think that that treasure over 1,000 years has made its way to the final resting place, and that the sacred vault remains to this day. And I think that was the real burden that Albert Pike carried and realized that he carried he had discovered or rediscovered, or probably was told by the native Indians themselves when he was accepted, that this sacred vault laid at the final resting place or final refuge of the Knights Templar in North America.
And are there clues in the correspondence as to where that final resting place is?
There are. And as you know, I'm Supreme Grand Master, Knights Templar, but also the highest degree, ninth degree of Masonic Rosicrucians. And there's a series of clues, various levels of clues associated with the Knights Templar Order and the Rosicrucian Order.
Now, the book, The Last Refuge of the Knights Templar, The Ultimate Secret of the Pike Letters, this is a sort of a fictionalized version. Tell me about the main protagonists, Thomas and Janet.
Well, Thomas, interesting, there are no actual descendants of MacLeod Moore. The family line died out, and I thought it was a real opportunity to develop a fictional descendant, a direct descendant of MacLeod Moore, Thomas. Thomas is a character that I developed out of my mind. He was filled with self-doubt. He was filled with anxiety. And he meets this beautiful young Jewish girl from New York who is obviously academic but associated with alchemy, Rosicrucianism, very spiritual body. And it's through Janet that she implies both physical and spiritual atonement to Thomas, to allow them to really rediscover the sacred vault's location in Western North America. And of course, they are pursued by the great villain, a Jesuit priest who's a psychopath, but he's acting on orders directly from the Vatican to recover these letters, which lead to the location of the sacred vault.
Rosicrucianism, can you just explain to my listeners sort of the major tenets of that that belief system?
Sure. Where Freemasonry is based on a moral allegory of rebuilding of Solomon's Temple, and there are parts of rediscovering a sacred vault under the ruins of Solomon's Temple and using those relics and artifacts to sanctify the building of the temple. It's a metaphor for life. As you go through, you build the foundations, the spiritual foundations of your body and your mind as you move through life itself. In Rosicrucianism, it's more of a metaphysical transformation based on alchemy, based on the earliest alchemists such as Francis Bacon, Thomas Locke, and others, Andreas Martin. What it does is more on a metaphysical, transformational basis, allow you to picture what you're doing. You're taking your body, which represents the rough matter of Earth, and molding it into that perfect form, trying to achieve the philosopher's stone, that purity of spirituality, of light within your body and mind itself. What's really interesting is a lot of people don't realize is that you can apply on both the spiritual aspect or speculative aspect, but also a physical aspect. And one of the things that you may have noticed in my book, I talk about taking the white powdered gold, the monoatomic gold. I've actually been taking that off and on for a number of years, as have a number of my associates, and it really, really allows you to achieve a higher level of enlightenment, of clarity and spirituality.
Fascinating. Janet is also a descendant of the Merovingian kings and the House of David.
Yes.
And these were Frankish kings, I believe. Tell me about the Merovingians and how and why that is important to this story.
Well, the Merovingians are obvious descendants of the Holy Family of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. They were the first kings of France. and they controlled Western and Eastern France and most of Europe at the time. And they descended into the Frankish kings. And then the French royal houses, which is fascinating in itself, because the original nine knights, the Knights Templar, although they were outwardly Catholic, they practiced the old, what's known as the old religion, Jewish mysteries, based on information that they attained from their ancestors, the Jewish high priests of the temple. And so the belief is that the original nine knights, they didn't just stumble upon the Templar treasure. They actually had information passed down from their ancestors as to where the treasure actually lay in the ruins of Solomon's temple.
So are the Merovingians, are they essentially the embodiment of the Holy Grail, if the Holy Grail is to be seen as a sort of a metaphor for Jesus, the bloodline of Jesus?
Yes, that's actually, Richard, that's a perfect way of describing it. They were the embodiment of the Holy Family itself.
And the Jesuits, the psychotic, sexually perverted Jesuit priest that's in the book, and the Jesuits were, I guess you could say, the kind of the stormtroopers for the Vatican. What is it that is so threatening to them contained in these letters?
Well, what they want is, there's an assumption that within the sacred vault to this day lies certain records, genealogical records, relics, artifacts associated with the Holy Family. There's ossuaries containing the bones of Jesus and Mary and the children that through DNA testing today could prove that there are actual descendants of the Holy Family remaining within the population to this day. And if that's true, you wouldn't really need the Vatican or the church to be the conduit to speak directly to God. In actual fact, the embodiment of Jesus himself would be within certain portions of the population.
Now, of course, this is a fictionalized account, but when you uncovered these letters between Pike and Colonel Moore, did it sort of pique the interest of the Vatican? Was there any sort of response to the news from the Vatican that these letters had been uncovered?
No, because I haven't really advertised it as such. The existence of the letters has only been exposed through my fictionalized book. So it's going to be interesting to see if it does cause any concern. Again, coming full circle, you asked, why did I embody that information within a fictionalized story? There's your answer right there. The only thing I can say is that I don't have those letters in my house right now. Those letters are safely tucked away in a very safe spot, because they could represent certain fuel to the fire against the tenets of the Catholic Church.
That's interesting. I mean, the people should understand that the Vatican is essentially a nation state. It has its own secret police, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And if you look over history, what's really interesting from a Native Indian point of view, if you look at the cause of the genocide that has been imposed upon the Native Indians over 200 years, the Jesuits have been behind that in terms of the residential schools, in terms of the Christian movement into the Native Indian areas, communities out west. It was all Jesuit related. So my love of the Jesuits is non-existent. And it's interesting that we have a Jesuit priest as Pope in the Vatican today.
The last refuge of the Knights Templar, the ultimate secret of the Pike letters. How do we get a copy, William?
You can get a copy through Amazon, your local online bookstore, Chapters, Indigo, other major bookstores, or you can order it through my publisher, Inner Traditions, at www.innertraditions.com.
William, this is fascinating, and I don't know, I suspect Hollywood's going to come calling for this one. This is just a natural. Congratulations, and thank you for spending some time with me.
Well, thank you very much, Richard. Again, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Perhaps when the next book comes out, we'll talk.
100%. Thank you.
Take care now.
Okay, before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs, I'll be back in a moment to share a few details about an upcoming episode. Let's say hello to Colleen Forgas, our nutritional therapist and the manager at our Strange Planet Full Script Dispensary. Hello once again, Colleen. How are you doing?
Coach, I'm great. How about you?
Truth be told, a little bit of muscle pain. I've started walking and just a little, typical muscle pain. What do we have?
My favorite product is called Intenzyme Forte by Biotics Research, and I actually take this one every day. I love it. It's a broad-spectrum proteolytic enzyme. It's designed to reduce inflammation throughout the body. It helps with muscle pain, especially when we've had a little too much exertion. It supports hormone processing, digestion, the immune function, and even circulation throughout the body.
Fantastic. Intenzyme Forte. All right, Colleen, we'll talk again soon.
Take care, Richard. Talk to you soon.
To get your Intenzyme Forte, go to strangeplanet.ca, then click on the Full Script Dispensary button. Remember, all orders receive 10% off, and orders of $50 or more ship absolutely free. These products have not been evaluated by the FDA and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure. If you have a medical concern, please consult your healthcare provider. Coming up next time on Conspiracy Unlimited, a demonologist discusses demons and unclean spirits, as well as his experiences living in a haunted house.
We do have malevolent beings who will pose as ancestors or deceased loved ones in order to gain consent from their victims. And I know that everybody in the field has seen that in hauntology.
Until then, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.